Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Breaking news, Terry Rozier. He'll be the next starting point guard of the Charlotte Hornets.
Step back, wide open, and it's good! Terry Rozier!
All right, what's going on, everyone, and welcome into another BuzzBeat episode, your favorite Charlotte Hornets podcast. You can follow us at BuzzBeat Pod on Twitter and find our episodes on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, Google Play, or your favorite podcasting app. This is Richie, and I'll be joined by co-host Brian today. If you want to follow us on our personal accounts, I am at Richie Randall. Brian is at BGeis_Bird. Brian, I'm just 40 followers away from 1,000. Is there any way that you can kind of maybe do a campaign for me?
Yeah, I'll stump speech and I'll use what little social media equity I have to help try to see if we can close the gap and get you to the four digit mark. Because everyone knows that's when you start making the big bucks on Twitter. Once you you start to live a lavish life on the interwebs, once you hit 1,000 followers on Twitter, that's when all of life's problems go away and you become rich.
Yeah. And you clearly know that because you're at that mark. And finished watching the Hornets game. They lost to the Wizards 121-107. The first half was somewhat promising. I mean, it's a sloppy game, up and down game, fast paced. Both teams' defensive just aren't existent here. So the Hornets' record falls to 16-32, I believe, and then they have a 1-2 record with the Washington Wizards on the season, which could come into play with tiebreakers and stuff like that later on as we get closer to the draft. But before we get into the Hornets in this game, Brian, I do want to get your thoughts, quick thoughts. I know you probably have talked about this before, but thoughts on Kobe. If you guys didn't listen to our last podcast, Spencer and I got to put out our thoughts on the whole situation. So give it a listen if you missed that. There's also a Paul Washington Sr. interview too. But Brian, where were you and what kind of feelings were you experiencing on Sunday? And I'm assuming those feelings are still lingering, right?
Yeah, I'll try to be quick about this as much as possible because, you know, this is something we could talk about for a while. But no, I mean, I'll never forget. I was at the YMCA here in Raleigh. Actually saw when the news broke, the guys that were playing pickup basketball. I myself was not. I was just working out. But yeah, man, the gym just stopped playing basketball and cleared out after it. And that was sort of just the tip of the iceberg as you're starting to see more and more news come out about it. It's a complicated matter for a lot of reasons. Like, first off, it's incredibly sad and tragic. And, you know, you see how much Kobe meant to the game of basketball, to athletics, to the guys playing the game. I covered the Duke-Pittsburgh ACC game earlier this week in Durham, and both teams wore warmups that were dedicated to Kobe. There were purple and gold banners in Cameron Indoor Stadium. They did a moment of silence for Kobe before the game. Coach K, after the game and his press availability, he got choked up. You know, he had gotten to know Kobe actually pretty well during his time with Team USA Basketball, and he was sort of talking about you know, his family and the couple of days between Sunday and the game on Tuesday had been sharing photos and you know, these photos from the summer of 2008, 2012 with, you know, Kobe interacting with Coach K's grandkids. And you could see that it had a pretty severe impact on him. It's tragic, obviously, for a variety of reasons, having his daughter there, 13 years old. Everyone's talked about this stuff already, but to have the seven other people in this helicopter, it's hard to fathom. And I don't want to gloss over it at all either, but without, you know, feeling the need to just go down a whole other rabbit hole, like Kobe was a complicated character too, right? Like there are these like dark elements of his past. Mm-hmm. And that it definitely for a time had impacted my perception of him. But, in these moments, you don't want to just completely ignore that stuff. That's part of the fabric of what made Kobe Kobe. But you will, like, you're just trying to focus on clearly, like, this affected a lot of people and hurt a lot of people, and your heart goes out to obviously to all the families and really just to the game of basketball, because if you care about this, like, the game lost one of its most important characters ever. It sucks and sad, and is like a testament to just how, man, like the margins of life are just so thin sometimes, and really can't take anything for granted, because the whole adventure of life is just, it's precious, and it can be taken away at any moment, which is scary. But yeah, it's been interesting to see the way basketball, college, pro, the way everyone has reacted. In what's been not quite a full week since the tragic events of last Sunday.
Yeah, and Spencer brought up a good point on the last episode, just the kind of like the 180 that Kobe made, in terms of you view this guy as a basketball player that is, you know, somewhat on the selfish side, where he's, you know, trying to play hero ball. But then after his playing career, when you looked at him and saw all the images and videos of him as a father, he became mm-hmm. selfless, you know what I mean? So that's kind of like the 180 that we're talking about. And you know, yeah. Obviously there were some things in his past that Brian was talking about, but.
One last thing I'll follow up on that too, is like, I think you see a lot of players from older generations that speak down on the game where it is now. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's not at all where Kobe was. He was paying it forward in a lot of respects, yeah. Which was working out with younger players in trying to inspire guys that he was competing against. But you know, you heard about Jason Tatum working out with him in the summer, not Grayson Allen, but Gordon Hayward working out with him in the summer. You saw just how dedicated he was to promoting women's basketball too. And that's important. College, WNBA, Rebecca Lobo from ESPN tweeted that out. Like, no NBA player has given more, shined more of a light on this game than Kobe. And all of that goes into the tapestry that was Kobe Bryant. So yeah, enough. We've talked about this a lot. So.
Yeah, no. I mean, everyone has, and it's just one of those things. Like you said, you could probably talk about it for another hour. And the Hornets and the Wizards did make another tribute to Kobe tonight, with Washington taking an 8-second violation and Charlotte to start the game a shot clock 24-second violation. But as the game got going, you saw both of these teams and how little defense that they do play. The pace was up. And Charlotte looks like they had the game under control in that first half. You did mention pre-recording that towards the second quarter, things just seemed to be going in the direction of the Washington Wizards. But I had faith that the Hornets could pull this game out against a team that just really is one of, if not the worst, defensive teams in the NBA. You saw the Hornets constantly attacking the paint and the rim, especially in the first half, where they had 42 or something like that points in the paint. In the second half, it wasn't as frequent. The Hornets definitely made a point of emphasis. Anytime you saw Bertans in the game, it seemed like they were attacking him, you know, setting those cross screens and the back screens to get post-ups for PJ. And he actually might have been the worst wizard on the court tonight on both ends of the ball. I'm not sure how many points he scored, but it wasn't a lot. And I like that out of the Hornets, in terms of finding a negative on the opposing team and making sure that they attack that. I thought that PJ Washington played all right, but there's one thing that I just keep coming back to with PJ Washington, is his free throw shooting. it's something that he has got to get better at. I know that there's one instance in this game where he missed consecutive free throw shots. He was actually 1 of 4 tonight. I know that was not like a strong suit of his at Kentucky. I think he shot like in the 70s. But man, for a physical player like PJ Washington that you expect to see going to the line a little bit more frequently, especially as his career goes along, you would hope that he would be a little bit better from the free throw line. So, Brian, initial gut takeaways from this game, obviously both of these teams defensively just are bad.
26 points in the paint in the first quarter for Charlotte. They went to PJ Washington the first 8 minutes of the game at least a half a dozen times on the block, maybe even more than that. They certainly looked for him probably 8 or 9 times, and he got touches on most of those, maybe all but, you know, 1 or 2 of them. Some of that cross screening, slice screening action that they used for PJ to get him open, and I thought he had some decent success, and he had some nice passes out of the post. They got the ball rotating around a little bit too. And the Hornets in general did an oak like this offensively. They didn't lose this game offensively, even though they had a power outage in the third quarter, but 1.07 points per possession, low turnover rate in this game for the Hornets. Defensively is really where this stuck out. I mean, this is the Wizards in this game scored almost 1.25 points per possession. That's with a 21% turnover rate. They rebounded 48% of their misses in this game. Brad Beal got to the free throw line 15 times or for 15 attempts. Yeah, I mean, he was in attack mode the whole game. And this goes down. This is a top five or a bottom five, however you want to look at it, defensive performance for the Hornets so far this season in terms of defensive efficiency. I thought Charlotte's point of attack defense really struggled in this game. I mean, you know, Graham and Rozier, they're not stoppers. And as much as Monk has made strides defensively this season, he's not a stopper either. I thought Cody Martin helped and gave them something defensively, but this all just became so simple for Washington, which was like, I thought everyone was able to have success, you know, attacking Charlotte, but especially Brad Beal. You saw a lot of guard-to-guard exchanges so Beal could get the matchup, get Cody Martin off of him, and then go to work against Rozier. And then they would go to work 1-5 pick and roll, especially against Willie Hernangómez, who they dragged into that dance floor time and time again. And basically, you know, when the centers for Charlotte would drop, Beal would settle into a pull-up three. If they trapped or doubled, big man would slip, and Washington just did a great job playing 4-on-3 on the backside. Smith had some good luck in these exchanges as well too. And yeah, like the Hornets struggled defensively. They're one of the three worst defensive teams in the league. And Washington has entered tonight as a top 10 offense. And I don't, you know, they looked the part for the most part.
Yeah, and they started to pick up their offense in the second half, and really, it wasn't a lot of Beal in the third quarter. It was mostly some of the other surrounding parts. I think the Wizards went on a 13-0 run towards the end of the third quarter, and at that point, the Charlotte Hornets were down 7 heading into the fourth quarter. Just things weren't looking great for them. Defense-wise, like you said, you know, you're putting some of those bigs in the 1-5 pick and roll, and Hernangómez has always been poor defensively. I will say that I did make a note of it. Maybe it was just early on in the game, but I thought he actually played fairly decent in terms of, you know, his verticality and contesting at the rim. He's not going to be a Biombo by any means and racing shots from opposing players at the rim, but he did a good job of keeping his verticality, contesting the shot. He got a steal one time when Wizards were trying to make an entry pass. I take those little highs from Hernangómez and just applaud him there, because I know that that's a side of the ball that he does struggle with.
Yeah, I think for Billy, it's like, it's not effort, and that's why his verticality, his contesting at the rim can be fine. It's the stuff in space. Like, it's the pick and roll exchanges 25 feet from the hoop. That's really where he can struggle and get lost in those coverages. And yeah, I mean, Charlotte was pretty aggressive with how they handled some of those screens. They asked Willie and Cody to step out pretty far on some of these. Hernangómez dropped, but you know, on some of those he had to come up pretty high. Zeller did as well, and again Washington just created the advantage off that and attacked downhill.
I think the player of the game for this game, I think it's a pretty obvious choice for the Hornets, Miles Bridges. I mean, he had a couple of corner threes in this game. He even had a pull-up above the break three to start the game. Felt like he was pretty active on the offensive glass. I think he had five or six of them on the offensive glass. And he did pretty good off the dribble as well. It's one of those things where that's something that's slowly starting to pick up. I don't feel confident in him driving off the dribble without fumbling the ball a little bit, but he did have a play in the fourth quarter where he spun baseline and went up for a contested layup and made it. Surprised me how he was able to handle the ball on that specific play and not lose control and able to go up all in one motion. So Miles Bridges, I think he's showing signs of improvement in a lot of different areas. I think he did hit a little bit of a wall, maybe about a month ago, but I feel like he's been one of our best players recently. I know that's kind of weird to say, Brian.
Yeah, I thought he showed a little bit of a little bit of a dog. Like he has a couple times this year, sort of trying to go at Beal late in the game. Obviously, after Beal had sort of salted it away with a pull up three, but I thought Miles did okay. I mean, on the first possession of the game, he was matched up with Beal. They ran a little weak side pin down, and Beal pitched it back to Mahinmi, I believe, for an easy dunk. And it looked like, somehow Zeller and Bridges had sort of mishandled that exchange because, again, Mahinmi was just wide open for the role. But I thought there were no sort of like glaring deficiencies defensively with Miles tonight. Like, he has some of those games where, he's really out of position, a handful of times for a game. They didn't say that there was anything quite like that. I would need to double check the tape to confirm it, but I thought for the most part he was fine defensively.
Do you like his yapping with Beal?
I mean, yeah, sure, it's fine. Like I said, he's gone after a couple people this season. I mean, I definitely don't mind it, and perhaps it shows a little bit of a competitive edge too. But there was even one possession late in the, I believe it was the second half actually, where like Charlotte ran pick and roll, Zeller was on the short roll, Bridges was like weak side corner, and he, as the play was happening, he started cutting baseline, like to the rim. He ended up catching the pass like halfway between the 3-point line in the paint, and he dribbled back out and hit a three. But it was another one of those plays where it was like, I think you gotta just stay home in the corner, because he sort of ended up bringing his man into the line of Zeller's role. I think you can still occasionally question Miles' feel for the game, but overall, yeah, I think he was pretty good tonight, and I like him showing a bit of a competitive edge. And yeah, when he has games like that where he doesn't stick out defensively, I think you got to consider those a win, probably.
Yeah. And I think he almost threw down the dunk of his career at this point. I don't think he had any shot of putting it down. But like once he like jumped out from where he jumped from, I think it was against Bertans, I was like, there's no way he's throwing this thing down. I wanted to bring this up. So it seems like, I think for the past couple of games since we got back from Paris, Borrego is obviously running out the starting lineup of DG, Rozier, Miles, PJ, and Cody. And then the four players off the bench that seem to be getting the most consistent playing time, Monk, Cody Martin, and then you have Marvin, obviously still a veteran there, but he's getting playing time, and then also Billy. So you're seeing some DNPs from Bacon, from Batum, which to me is not surprising, MKG, obviously, which has been a consistent thing throughout the course of the year, but also Biombo. It seems like he has gone from that starting center all the way to a DNP, and you actually saw him. I don't know if anyone took notice of this. You saw him coaching up Billy at one point in the third quarter. So it seems like the players on the bench are still into the game. Like I took a big note of that. Even on that missed dunk by Miles, or just anything in particular, you still have Batum and Bacon and MKG and Biombo into the game. But
agreed.
I do like this new rotation, not in the sense that I feel like it's going to give a success and wins or whatever, but you're playing the younger players plus Marvin. So any thoughts on that? Biombo and MKG and Batum just not getting playing time? I mean, I don't think there's any reason to.
I think this is how, like, if I were to put myself in Coach Borrego's shoes, and there's a million different variables to consider here, but I think this is sort of like how my rotation would look, to be totally honest with you. Now, whether you want to have Aaron Gomez or Biombo, I mean, you're splitting hairs either way. Like, Charlotte's going to struggle defensively. Charlotte's going to struggle when Cody Zeller is on the bench, unless they're playing PJ at the five, which they got to some late in the first half. They played the last couple of minutes of the first half, actually, with PJ and Miles at the 4-5. So I like that aspect of this rotation, too, is that you're getting to some of those small ball looks that allow Miles to also play the four. I think that's a good idea. I like having Malik Monk get consistent minutes as well. He was on a three-game streak of playing pretty good basketball. Tonight, he struggled shooting the ball. I actually didn't think his shot selection was great. It looked closer to previous years of Monk, just sort of tougher shots from that 8 to 12 range almost. And again, he keeps missing threes. Overall, Charlotte did not shoot well from deep in this game, 9 of 30, which is not great. Only 30 attempts. That's not a crazy volume for Charlotte. And the Hornets now fall to 3-13 in games when they shoot under 31% on threes this season. That's just a random cutoff number, but not good. I mean, when the Hornets, Devontae Graham struggling above the break threes, it's going to be tough for them to mount serious offense. PJ Washington in almost 23 minutes, he did not get up a three-point attempt tonight either, which is, it's not optimal either. But I'm glad Cody Martin, 23 minutes, that looks about right to me. Malik Monk, almost 28 minutes. I like that as well. And I think this rotation, it makes sense, but I am certain this is not the last time it's going to be shaken up, And I do think you bring up a good point, though, which is that I've kept up with this all season. I think MKG and Nick Batum have been engaged all season, even as their roles have fluctuated. And look, you can say these guys are professionals, they're well compensated, blah, 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 blah. And yes, those two things are true. They could be checked out, and they're not. They've been encouraging. They've been involved on the bench. They've been into the games from what I can tell just on my couch from watching on TV. I think that matters, and I think it's a testament to this culture that we've talked about, Borrego and this coaching staff and the new front office building.
All right, so Brian, they actually came out with some new rules for the All-Star game in Chicago. So first off, the teams are going to obviously be competing for four quarters, but the first three quarters, which I just think are odd to me, every quarter is going to start at a score of 0-0, and it's going to be 12 minutes long, like a regular game would be, but they're resetting the score every quarter, almost to take, I think they're keeping tally of what team wins which quarter. And then the final quarter, they're going to have a final target score that they will set. And what they're going to do is they're going to give the leading team add 24 points in honor of Kobe Bryant. And that's going to be the target score. So I'm hoping that the cumulative score there isn't that big of a gap to where the team that is in behind doesn't have to catch up so much. I don't mind the target score as much. I do think that starting every quarter at 0-0 is a little bit odd. But I've said this before, I don't really watch the All-Star game that often. I will say that. I do watch the All-Star events with the three-point contest, the dunk contest, and the skills competition more frequently than the All-Star game. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on these kind of odd changes to the rules here?
Not much. I don't have a strong opinion really one way or the other. I think the changes are, while I like that they're trying to do something for charity, that's great, right? Even mm-hmm. if you could say hey, they could maybe even do a little bit more. These billionaire owners could donate even more money to these Chicago area charitable concerns. But it's not my money. I don't think they're that complicated. I feel like there was a fair amount of people on Twitter that were sort of complaining about how cumbersome these new rules seemed. I don't see it like that. There's also a good chance I don't watch the All-Star game. There's a lot of college basketball going on, maybe not on Sunday nights, but basically during basketball season, if I don't have to watch competitive games, I don't mind taking a night off to hang out with my friends or family or watch a movie or whatever either too. So I think it's cool that they're trying something new. This doesn't move the needle much in either way for me, but it gives them another way to honor Kobe and perhaps find some, pass out some money, some charitable concerns in Chicago. I assume those are positive things in my book, but, I don't have a strong opinion on this, to be totally honest with you.
Yeah, guys, let us know what you guys think about these new rules, if they really sway your opinion on if you're going to watch the game or not. I agree with Brian 100%. They're not complicated. Actually, resetting the score at 0-0 makes it less complicated so you guys can keep up with who wins the quarter. So thanks again for tuning in to another BuzzBeat. The next time the Hornets play will be Saturday in San Antonio against the Spurs. As always, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. For Brian, I am Richie. We'll see you guys next time.